Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the next edition of the Guardian Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Attorney Eric Daigle, and happy to have you back here again. Hey, I promised you ending 2024 that we would find ways to get more for 2025. We're already off to a good start as we start to get ready for conference season and a lot of different training programs across the country. I'll be bringing my podcast mic this year because I'm going to definitely find the people that we need to along the way to give you a little insight and give you a little guidance. And today, probably way overdue, he'll agree to, I get to invite Joe Race. Attorney Race has been with the Daigle Law Group for how long have you been here?
Almost 7 years.
7 years? Damn, wow. Yeah, he only said that to make it sound like it's way overdue, but you know, he was part-time at some point. So for the past 3 years, yes, I think we got that right, Joe came to Daigle Law Group to assist in the organization, the guidance, and the management, which he is now takes full responsibility for with his team of subcontractors in our policy center. Like a lot of you know, in many of our podcasts, we talked about our policy development and how we focus very much on policy development. And so the DLG Policy Center, which is our policy team, and also the focus, which we'll get into a little bit with Joe, is his accreditation application. And I'd like to say Joe is the guru. So let's start with, hey, Joe, how are you?
Well, sir, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome. You made it to the podcast booth.
I mean, 7 years, about right.
You know, no. Five of those were part-time.
No, three of those were part-time.
All right, three of those.
Listen. Three and a half and three and a half.
All right. Listen, you know, come on, I'm busy. So, Joe, and I really didn't think today's topic would be the first topic that I'd bring Joe on, but he's done some work lately on AI and really focused on it. And we wanted to keep you updated because, as you know, here at Daigle Law Group, we try very hard to make sure that we are keeping in tabs with the current trends. Like I always say, and Joe says it too, if we're telling you something that you already need to know, then it's too late. Our job is to look ahead and at least start the discussions, which we've already done on this topic. But let me take the wonderful opportunity to explain Joe. All right, now where do I begin? Okay. So I guess you could start out with, if you really, he's actually an interesting character in the fact that he started out correctly. So he started out the United States Marine Corps. And if I give him a second, he'll probably do like an oorah or something.
Oorah.
There you go. Okay. All right. So, and so things were looking up then, but then he went from the Marine Corps to legal and got his law degree and okay, we can't fire him for that. And then he decides, then he's going to go into public service and ends up, going into law enforcement, the Madison Police Department, where he had a great tenured career with them, working his way all the way up to the rank of captain and achieving a few skill sets along the way, I guess we'll do with that. But while at the Madison Police Department, he had full range of operations and from everything you would expect of an admin commander, and from where he's a guru at accreditation, policies, operations, internal affairs, management, you name it, he's done it. So I was very lucky a few years ago, more than three now, to actually get to convince him to leave his first love and come over to Daigle Law Group, which we hope we can make his second love along the way. But who starts out as an attorney, Joe? Like most cops, most of the people we know, all the cop attorneys in our world, we all overachieved ourselves out of a good job. You can't say that.
I can tell you that it made the academy a lot easier.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it should have at that
point. Probably put a bullseye on your back too with the instructors since you knew more than they did.
I did, Arizona versus Grant came out. I was the one that had to brief it for the class, you know, things like that.
So. Yeah, it's a briefing article, briefing legal cases while in the academy. That's a good way to start. So, like I said, Joe's specialty in one of, if you go to our accreditation managers class or the advanced accreditation managers class, Joe has developed and is the lead instructor for those classes. Phenomenal, because, you know, we've known for decades that accreditation is going to become more and more important. And I think really what put a lot of people's mind into accreditation was the police reform that came after 2021 and the issues that we saw with police reform after the death of George Floyd. So So we started the interaction of accreditation, and Joe also teaches the background class here at Daigle Law Group. But today's topic that I want to bring up is something that we started about a year ago. And in today's topic, artificial intelligence. What do you think, Joe?
It's so complicated. Everyone kind of thinks they know enough about it to put it into play. And I think what we're going to see is what we're already seeing. And this is where we have to come in, is they're not putting into play correctly. And all it's going to take is one department to have a, we'll call it a subpar deployment. Some court's going to take it away. And when we talk artificial intelligence, we'll talk about it, you know, kind of just AI in general, but we can break this down into anything that we're using right now, whether it's, you know, license plate readers, facial rec, everything in between. It's found its way in there. And I mean, even report writing, and that's a whole, gotten into lively discussions on that one, and that's a whole different thing. But
we know one thing. We know one thing about cops is we like to buy cool stuff, right? Without any issue.
Well, that's what IACP is for. And you know, we talk about it.
Hey, don't tell them that.
Is we know what's going to happen is the chief's going to go to IACP and come back with some new gadget and going to throw it to patrol and be like, hey, tonight, young go-getter, you go put that into play.
So let's even talk about what I saw on the news this morning. As I'm getting ready this morning, I see the certain parts of the country getting ready for spring break. And this one was specifically Miami. And the chief was on. And Miami's ready for the spring breakers and ready for them with a lot of technology, ready for them for with pole cameras, with flock cameras, with automated license plate readers, with pre-launch drones, and they talked about AI, the use of AI. And interestingly, the guy being interviewed from the police department, the chief said, you know, because the lady asked him, is this facial recognition? And he said, no, it's object recognition. And I said, ooh, that's interesting. And so let's get a little bit of history here. After our 2023 Use of Force Summit, Joe and I were having a discussion, and the discussion was, hey, should we get ahead of AI in the fact of use of force reporting? How does AI affect the, you know, the perception of the officer? How does AI affect qualified immunity? How does AI affect, well, let's just be honest, English is not a solid skill set anymore. And therefore, you know, I was at the academy a couple of weeks ago, and I said to them, they said, hey, what class do you think we should put in the academy? I said, English with Sister Anne, with a ruler, and let's get it done, right? So we've already done one podcast on AI, and that was a policy that Joe had put together for our policy clients on AI to just start to, we just wanted to get something out there. One, because we know it takes you all time to start to evaluate and identify and that stuff. So we did an initial article, an initial podcast, and put the policy out there. And we got some response, huh, Joe?
We did. Some people, one department put it into play, not fully, and then got questioned on it and then named us in their article when they were called out on it.
Yeah.
But they used essentially one paragraph out of our entire thing and none of the meat. None of the stuff, none of the precautions, the prohibitions that we said to put in there. They just took a small segment and said they used the DLG policy, which I appreciate that, but you didn't use the meat of the policy, which was meant to protect our agencies as they develop this new software, whatever. Our rules here are pretty simple. Whatever you get before it hits the road, you have to have a policy. And before it hits the road, there has to be training. And kind of going back to that IACP idea, we know that doesn't happen. And artificial intelligence in particular, whatever this technology is, whatever we're trying to use, we have to deploy it correctly, because again, a failure here, the one thing we know about law enforcement, it doesn't just affect you. One error affects every one of us in this profession. And right now there's some really good uses of technology if we do it right. But if we screw it up, we're going to lose it for all 890,000 of us across the country.
So you've been doing some research and writing on this subject, and you have a couple of articles teed up that we're going to be releasing in the near future. And so let's just clarify for everybody, you can get our initial article in the policy in the podcast. That's all available for you now. But now we're looking forward to what is our next step. And Joe titled one of the articles we'll get into, which I think we're going to title this podcast, let's take a pragmatic approach, right, in deployment of AI. And I love the concept. And what we know is that AI is here. It's coming. It's here. And interesting, a lot of companies are pushing it because it's cool and, you know, we buy it. So, and we've had conversations with some of those companies because we want to be transparent. Because one of the things we do recognize is that, well, let's start out with the making sure that we set our biases, which is that this technology of AI is going to have numerous benefits for the operations of police departments. We're not sitting here saying AI can't be involved in police department, right? Would you agree with that?
I agree, yeah.
And we already see it in license plate readers and predictive policing and traffic analysis. And listen, I think AI is great for any type of volume that we have to digest. So, but Joe like simple words, and meaning that he always has this concept in accreditation that says words matter, and his words here are do it smartly. What do you mean by that, Joe? What are the things that we have to focus on here?
The first thing to understand is those that are developing it are not cops. They're not law enforcement. They're not beholden to the Constitution, quite honestly. They're private companies that are developing a product. So when we get called to task on this, they're not going to be sitting next to us necessarily in court. Maybe you get them there, probably not. And these tools are being developed by scientists. Their method for scientific research is much different than ours. They will allow for failure. But as we know in the Constitution, there's no acceptable rate for failure. One improper arrest based on a facial recognition hit is a failure, and that's enough to get it to pull this tool from us. So the scientists have a different mentality about it. And I think there's groups out there pushing that are very scientific, and we appreciate the science and the development, but they're not understanding, I don't think fully understanding or comprehending the legal side of it, the Fourth Amendment violations, the 42 USC 1983 violations that could be there if this doesn't roll out correctly. So we have to analyze that when we get these tools to say what's their approach and what's our approach? And they're, quite honestly, they're not completely the same. We have the same outcome, but they're willing to misstep along the way, and we can't be willing to misstep. We can't misstep.
Yeah, that's fair, because, you know, the one thing that I have said often lately on the road is that the concern with technology is that everybody has to remember, and we got to set the baseline to refresh your recollection, is that the Supreme Court hasn't seen a technology case since 2018 in the Carpenter decision with geolocation data. So one of the points that I try to make to everybody is, boy, we're a lot farther along now than we were in 2018. And when we buy all this cool stuff, I say, and when Joe says to the policy clients, I say it in the training, hey, you know, you're just one light switch away from all of this becoming non-effective or non-able to be used in the application. So, Joe, let's start with just like an overview, which is, I know that you've been diving deep into the AI world. So just give, you know, the layman's foundational understanding of the diverse types of AI and their potential application in the field of law enforcement.
Yes, I mean, I guess start with kind of a little history. It's not a new term, and we think that it's somewhat new. This goes back to the 1950s. They started kicking around this term, which doing some reading on it, I think it's a cool history. But we didn't have the power in the computers to use it. You know, and those were computers the size of rooms back then. Now we have that more than that power in our hands. So we obviously have the technology, and that's why we've been able to release this. But the kind of break down AI into three different areas, kind of the narrow AI. And that's the term that the computer scientists use. Doesn't mean that it's weak by any stretch of the imagination, or that's the other name for it. It just means it's very specifically functioned. And that's usually like our license plate readers. There's one function for that. It's to review plates and load plates. Then we get into the general, which they say general artificial intelligence is kind of theoretical. And they mean that only in the sense that it's basically untapped. We have a few things that we're doing with it, some of our predictive algorithms, machine learning, robotics that we're currently using. So it's there, and we're deploying this kind of general artificial intelligence right now, but there's so much more to go. And then there's been talk, and maybe you heard the president talk about it months ago or a couple months ago, talked about, you know, trying to get us towards that super artificial intelligence, which, and if you're going to be doomsday, that's Skynet. But, you know, it's completely, you know, it can run itself, it can manage itself level of artificial intelligence. So that's still a long ways down the road.
Well, I hope so. I'm really not looking forward to it. So, one of the concerns that I have with AI is that, as an old school guy, I think that we all look for shortcuts to do everything in life, right? And what we see is that AI is just another shortcut. But what is it shortcutting?
A fantastic tool. You know, and I think one of the concerns is, and we see it right now, shortcutting in the report writing side. And part of, there's a theory behind us writing reports is it gets you in the practice of identifying elements of crimes, probable cause, you know, and making you write that down makes
factor analysis. Yeah.
And now if we take that out and you're not writing your report in that sense, you're going to stop remembering what's probable cause, what are the elements of a larceny, things like that. Some of our repetitive tasks are there for a reason, just like in the military. You know, why do we do things a certain way? It's that repetitive task. And if we start to lose that, you know, is that going to, and because we are taking that shortcut to write a report that could hurt us big time in the big picture.
Yeah, and taking a look at your understanding article that we're about to put out, and hopefully in the next month or two, if not earlier, your conclusion in there, as you say, is that understanding the diverse types of AI and their application is crucial for law enforcement officers looking to leverage technology to enhance their work. By integrating AI, law enforcement agencies can improve efficiency, make data-driven decisions, and ultimately create safer communities. Embracing AI is not about replacing human officers, not yet anyway, right? But augmenting their capabilities to address the complex challenges of modern policing. What was your thoughts in coming up with that conclusion?
I mean, part of it is, and it's the idea of artificial intelligence is it is a tool. It's a tool used in drafting articles. It's a tool used in everything. I mean, I use it all the time.
Do you use AI?
Perhaps. You know, because it's, you know, you put it in there and the ability for it to synthesize so much data so fast, like it helps structure, you know, it gives you bullet points, gives you things to work on. If you need a lesson plan for something, if you type in, you want to create a lesson plan for recruits for immigration law, give it some parameters, you will have a lesson plan in less than 10 seconds. You know, so it's going to really help us, I think, in some sense, professionalize because it's a tool that's going to give us the structure that we need, you know, the kind of the legal defensibility in some areas. But it can't be done without us right now. And that's super AI says it can be done without us. But right now it can't be. And it's the integration between technology and person. The fear right now is AI is going to take my job. And AI is not going to take your job. The saying is that it's the person using AI that's going to take your job because they're making...
Because they got smart all of a sudden.
Because they're making themselves better.
They don't know what they're doing. They're just cutting and pasting. Hopefully
not. But hopefully, I mean, if you're using it right, you can... And some people out there may have gone to college and just used AI and gotten through. And I'm sorry for you.
Wasn't me, Joe, I promise.
But if, you know, there is a lot of good, you know, if you want to know about a topic, start putting it in there. And the more questions you feed it, the more, you know, it's going to drill down. Again, it's not perfect. And we've seen this, our brothers and sisters of the bar in various states have screwed this up. So, I mean, bar as far as lawyers, not bar as far as...
You know, where they have bourbon. Yeah, that's it.
But we've seen lawyers do this where they're submitting briefs that have made up cases in it.
Yeah.
Because they tried to...
Again, we just saw one, right? Wasn't there one...
Wyoming
lawyer that just got sanctioned because...
The biggest personal injury firm in the country.
Yeah, because he put there was cases, he cited cases that don't exist.
Eight of the nine cases in there were fake, were hallucinations. And that's where, again, right now, the technology cannot work without us. We can work without it. It can't work without us. So whatever you do with artificial intelligence, it still has to be checked by law, by a human, by, in our case, law enforcement, because without that, without the law enforcement perception, we could run into those, like Eric said, some of those qualified immunity issues. And that was our biggest concern with the first article and the first artificial intelligence policy, was really it's the qualified immunity thing. Is we rely, and our case law relies, our court system relies on officers' perception. Officers' perception, not computers' perception, no one else's perception. If we take officers' perception away, are we going to run into problems? So this is where we kind of, and I personally bounce back and forth between use of AI in some places, but not in others. And the caution, I think, that we both agree to is you can use it in other things, but you can't use it in police reports right now because of that perception, because
it's a legal conclusion. It's just like an expert witness. You can't, the expert witness, if you testify in court, you can't form a legal conclusion. You have to provide your training and experience, and you can analyze based on that. But when you start taking away objectively reasonable basis or probable cause or reasonable suspicion, the things that are necessary to meet those requirements are perception, including conclusions that you've come to based on your experiences, which AI doesn't have.
And that's, if we looked at our perception as such a fact-specific determination, and we know that artificial intelligence is based on generalities. By definition, it's based on generalities, which those two things are incompatible. So it's hard sometimes to walk this balance. And I'm sure some people are like, you're talking out of both sides, because there is a good use for it. Right now, again, I don't see it in the report writing side. And even in our first article, we even talked about things like Grammarly, as, it's artificial intelligence. You're taking your report, you're taking your words, putting it external to your agency. And the concerns I have with that is that's CJIS protected material. Like, you're putting personal identifying information into cyberspace. Now, yes, I know it goes to someone's server and the ability to track it down is probably extremely limited. However, CJIS doesn't give exceptions for that. So we're taking that information, putting it into like a Grammarly. I think that's a problem right now. I don't know, single out Grammarly here, but any of those type of services, if they don't have a CJIS compliant designation, then I think we've got other problems that we have not considered. And like we said, that's why we want to do it smartly, because we're launching this sort of technology without considering those ramifications, FOIA ramifications, Brady exculpatory evidence type ramifications. There's a lot of legal things that we spend our lives working on that aren't being considered because we're rushing to get this out. And if we rush, we're going to run into a problem.
Yeah, I mean, we always rush. That's the problem. That's why we have a job. So, because everybody rushes and then we get to pick up the pieces on the backside. You as you're preparing for especially the article, let's take a pragmatic approach. You talked about observing some troubling trends about the implementation of artificial intelligence into law enforcement that must be addressed. I know you just spoke about a few of them. Is there anything else that you're really looking at than the bigger picture on the surface level?
Like I said, it's the science approach versus the constitutional approach. And right now they're not compatible, because they work at where there's an acceptable failure rate. And one of the classes I went to, and they tried to use this as their justification, they said, well, there's an acceptable failure rate in airplanes. Like, people don't want to hear that, but it's a fact. There is an acceptable failure rate.
Yeah, I'm getting a one in the morning. Can we not talk about that? I'm intrigued, though. What is the acceptable?
Oh, they didn't tell you what. It's very, very small. But
thanks for that,
John. Again, the Constitution doesn't make those exceptions. There is no acceptable failure rate there. And that is, appreciate science developing this, but we can't use case law to work this out. That's not how this works. Because if we're using case law, that means we're taking somebody's liberty and somebody's freedom. And that's not an acceptable failure rate. So that's what I kept coming back. It was a really good program I went to, it was really good, but they kept like, use it. And it's like, well, hold on. Like, we got to work out some of these other things first.
You address in your article, we talked about the legal issues, the First Amendment issues, the Fourth Amendment issues, freedom of information issues, stuff that we've already talked, data retention, security issues, and ethical issues. And that's something we're really intrigued on right now. And I know you're in a rabbit hole on the ethical issues with facial recognition and the implementation of new AI, especially in crime centers throughout the country. And that's what was on the news this morning in the city of Miami and their real-time crime center, the software they have, the cameras, the ability and the AI that they're using to manage it all, to find license plate. I was interested, like they said, objects. We're going to find a car. We're going to find a license plate. We're going to find a bicycle. And I'm like, oh, you're not going to find the person on it. But beyond the legal side, what are the operational issues that you have some concern about?
I think training is are the individuals using it trained to use it? We have to have a policy. Again, that's always going back to the first. My first question is always me, what's your policy? And what are acceptable uses? What are unacceptable uses? And quite honestly, there's a couple of groups out there, and I know this is going to be hard to hear, but the ACLU has a lot of good information out there that we should all look at, because if they come after you, that's what they're looking at. I mean, they've given you a roadmap of issues. And one of the things that they stress in pretty much all of their technology concerns is they want punishment or sanctions for violations. It shouldn't just be, oh, this is okay. They want some teeth in these policies. And I think that to ensure that there's no misuse. And we know that we have that with CJIS. I mean, I think Collect, if you violate it, is about 5 years in prison and like $250K.
Right. So if you run information that you don't have a legal right to do, or, there's been plenty of cases of officers looking up future girlfriends, current girlfriends, former girlfriends, boyfriends, same area, and they get pretty jammed up for that. They can lose access and that kind of stuff. But that's the point. Like, who's the entity that's gonna manage this?
Well, because we don't have one, we have to do it internally. And I think that's what, if everyone's waiting for some, like we need another government agency to run something, it's not going to happen with this. It just doesn't seem to be there. So that means we have to police ourselves, which means we need to have local policies with local teeth. And because if we try to wait, one thing I always say in accreditation, if you're waiting for the accreditation standards to be your guiding principles, we're way behind. Because that's going to be, I think they just put out license plate readers in the last year, and those have been up for a decade already. So I think there's a long way to go, but we have to police ourselves, which means a solid policy, very clearly outlining all those elements, how you can use it, how you can't use it, data retention. I'm really miffed at the data retention issues right now, because this data is being held by a private company who doesn't believe it has to comply with FOIA, which in some sense it doesn't, but the agency is putting the information in there. So I think there's a disconnect even with freedom of information requests right now as to how we can get this data. And, can a company, a private vendor say, well, this is law enforcement sensitive information? I don't think they can make that designation, since they're not a CJIS type agency themselves. So there's a lot of very specific legal issues that I think are going to come up. So we have to be at the local level. We have to have a solid policy that we enforce, not just have the policy, it has to be enforced, which means audits, documented audits, and discipline when necessary. And I know that's something we don't talk about, but since we do so much in the IA world, we know that discipline is absolutely crucial.
We talked about this in the first podcast of this, but something I've been pushing is the duties of the supervisor to manage this. This is not a command thing. This is actually, in my opinion, this is a first line supervisor issue, because you're the ones that are reading the reports. And by the way, if you read a report and your officer learned how to write English, that's a clue. Like, if there's a verb, a noun, an adjective in a full sentence and you've never seen that before, well, that means they got it somewhere. And so what are the other things that the supervisors can focus on or pay attention to in being that risk assessment tool for their agency?
Some of the precautions that I've seen out there, been coming at that national level, is if you're using it, you have to state it in your report. If you use LPR, you have to state in your report. If you used a software to draft your report, it should be at the bottom of your report. So, but the supervisor need to be looking at that. And honestly, supervisors, and I know, and especially in our bigger departments, are busy, and I get it. But sometimes you got to ask a question. You don't just rubber stamp the reports. And we know, you know, one, do your officers have access to this? Do they have access to the license plate readers? Do they have access to it? One, that should be part of your policy. Who can use it and when?
Yeah, the database is accessing it, right?
Because it's like, how are you getting this information? How'd you generate that lead? And listen, supervisors right now, and again, we're kind of seeing it, is you got to supervise. It, you know, you have to be hands-on, especially with this new technology because it's so powerful. And unless you want, you know, your shift to be the one making the case law, because, you know, Sarge, you'll be called in there too. You know, you'll be there testifying about it. So really review these reports and listen, you got to ask your officers, where did you get this information? If it just appears, you know, they use some sort of technology. And let's, again, we know even from years past, social media was a place we looked at for a lot of information. And was that always documented in the report? Not necessarily, but, you know, now I think we've gotten used to doing that. We search social media for this. We have to do the same thing with these other technologies.
And another topic as we try to wrap this up a little bit was that you talked about collaboration and collaboration with the community specifically prior to deployment of new AI technologies. Tell me about that.
Well, we've seen epic failures by not talking to the community. And I mentioned Skynet. It's funny when you talk to people in the robotics world that when they say they're in robotics, they said the first comeback, everyone is like, oh, Skynet. Because it's this fear of this overpowerful, you know, artificial intelligence entity taking over. So if we don't work with our communities, their first response, that knee-jerk reaction is, you're taking over, you're going to monitor everything that we do. And we saw examples of this in Baltimore and Oakland. Again, two cities that are known for their justice stances or, you know, civil rights stances over the years. Not the two places you want to kind of launch a brand new tech program, but that's what happened. And in Oakland, it started out as a small camera system around the ports, the ports coming in and out of the city, and then turned into like hundreds of cameras, weather monitoring, license plate readers. They basically had the city wired. And now Oakland has probably one of the most restrictive technology implementation guidelines in the country, that they actually have a technology implementation board, I forget the exact name of it, where you have to present to them, because what they didn't like is the fact that you as Oakland PD and the city put this on its people without telling them. And I think a lot of education is important here. If we're going to deploy anything, and I mean, honestly, anything, red light cameras, license plate readers, talk to your community, at least have a listening session. If nobody shows up, because we know most people are apathetic and won't, they had their opportunity. But I think it's incumbent upon us as law enforcement to at least give our communities a chance. Because if we don't include them in the conversation, if we don't include them as stakeholders, they'll be able to shut it down. And that negative press, again, will do more damage to, again, all of us in law enforcement than having one meeting where, you know, a couple people are irritated. But at least you put it out there, explain what it is. I mean, I'm not saying a pure sales pitch, but really explain what this is, how you're going to use it. And their push, of course, is going to be transparency. I think we saw that in Oakland and Baltimore in particular, but in a lot of these communities, you have to be transparent with your people. And if you're looking at tech, those of you in New York State, look at New York DCJS has some model policies on, I think, drones and license plate readers in particular. They have very specific reporting guidelines, even at a state level, that, again, if you're looking at a framework because you don't have your policy yet, that could be a good place to start.
Yeah. All right. So as we wrap this up, because, I mean, I know we'll be back because this topic is not going to go away. It's only at the beginning stages. And in fact, you know, we have here at Dega Law Group, you know, this podcast is supported by our DLG Learning Center. And we know some of our larger summits are starting to hit the registration application, the First Amendment Summit on end of May, just after Memorial Day. And we're just starting to put together our technology summit for August, which is a virtual online aspect, which is going to be dealing with a lot with artificial intelligence. So you definitely want to keep track of those. We know we're going to have to give you a lot of updates on this subject as we start to go get through it and get to understand it a little bit more. So, Joe, as we wrap this up, any last thoughts on where you are and where we are in the preparation of something that looks like it's coming, whether we want it to or not. And we're probably, like you said, we're probably the minority who doesn't want it, because most people are like, well, will it do my report for me? Well, then let's get it, right? But we talked a lot about our concerns, but what's your overall wrap up thoughts on this subject?
I agree. It's coming. We just have to decide how we're going to use it. Again, which is going to go back to that policy. Your policy needs to be sound. And you have to be willing to change. It's not that you put it out there, it's going to stay there forever. And failure to address it, I think, is bad. You know, as we all know, whether we know it or not, whether you're advocating for it or not, your officers are using some sort of artificial intelligence through their reports. Like, that is, we hear it from all over the place. So if you don't have something in place telling them how to use it smartly and what's acceptable and what's not, then you have to expect they're going to use it completely. So give them guidelines. Let's be honest. Like we said, talking about that first line supervisor, our people want to be led. So lead them, tell them what's acceptable. And I think that's our responsibility as agencies to do that for our people.
Yeah. As I was doing some research, if those of you are members of the IACP and have access to the April 2024 IACP magazine, it was all about AI. A lot of good articles on both sides. One of the articles I'd like to reach out, especially to all you younger officers that are listening to this, trying to get that little nugget of information to make you a better officer. But I'm gonna remind you of something that our good friend Jerome Spencer, an attorney out of Maryland, said. He wrote an article there that says you should not get your legal advice from AI, right? Like, especially in the world of search and seizure and application of interpretation of law. I would hope that you're still going to rely on us human beings for that, because the challenge with that is one thing that scares me, and Joe and I teach a lot at the academy, is, you know, we dedicate hundreds of hours of training on very complex topics so that officers fully can understand it the way that they're supposed to understand it. And when you get it raw from throwing it in a chat window, you may be putting yourself at legal harm, in the way of legal harm, with a lot of risk too. So while there may be the three rules of robotics, let's add a fourth one that says, do not get legal advice from a robot. Right? And as I wrap this up, we know that organizations are pushing for the deployment of artificial intelligence technology. We know that there's a lot of companies out there. I think this year was pretty evident at IACP, where two football fields full of sponsors and companies, and a majority of them, if not all of them, were data-driven resource applications of computer technology. We used to call it the software companies. I think we're way beyond software companies now. But it was amazing to me, being at, you know, about 20 IACPs myself, I've never seen what I saw in Boston this year. So we know it's coming. But our concern, as we talk about, is without considering all the underlying factors, are doing a disservice to all law enforcement organizations. What effect does it have on your patch? And remember one thing, you know, Joe talked a lot about the report, writing the affidavit, writing the use of force report. And it's a really simple question, which we don't know the answer to. We have some ideas, but on the stand, when you get cross-examined and the question is, did you write this? Did you use artificial intelligence to prepare this? And you have to say yes. What effect does that have on the perception of the officer? I agree with Joe 100% that it is crucial that we create a sustainable infrastructure, considering all the factors that we talked about in deploying the new artificial intelligence technologies. And I think, Joe, we're going to be talking about this subject for a long time. And as we do, and I know you've dived a little deeper, if I can, that's correct English. I don't think it is. You have gone a little deeper in looking at this issue. last final thoughts on where do we, other than the implementation of this technology and the reports in this areas, do you think facial recognition is the next hot button topic?
I think it's going to be big. There's so many questions about it that, and it is so unbelievably powerful. And the one issue, I think one of the biggest issues is...
And we're the only, one of the only countries that don't use it because we have a constitution.
And we've also, so many of us have willingly given that up and given our picture into it. And listen, if you're on LinkedIn, which we both are, it asks you to verify. Well, what does it want to verify? It wants to verify with my license through Clear, which is Clear AI, which is the biggest facial recognition database on the planet. You know, and we're kind of, we were giving these little things away over and over.
And I'm not liking Sean. I'm not liking Joe today. He's like, you know, is there anything else that's safe? Like, I got to get on this plane tomorrow. Like, well, what the hell's going on?
But yeah, facial recognition is going to be the next big one. And quite honestly, there's, and if you go to the ACLU or Georgetown University School of Law Center for, I think it's Policing and Privacy, or NYU School of Law Policing Center, some great resources. And I'll be honest, I kind of like the NYU one. I think it's a very middle of the road approach, kind of this same idea of do it smartly. But it'll tell you where some of these ideas are going. But especially with facial recognition, there's been a few cases. Right now, there's ACLU's tracking about 8 or 9 cases where it's been used as probable cause, which it's not. It cannot be used as probable cause to make arrests on people that had solid alibis. And you know, I know a lot of people are thinking, well, it's only 8 people. Again, there is no acceptable failure rate in the Constitution.
Takes one.
And it's because we took a shortcut, stopped doing real police work, you know, got the facial recognition quote unquote hit, which we'll dive into that one later because that's a misnomer.
We're saving that. Is there just supposed to, yeah. They call this in the business, Joe, a teaser.
This is a teaser.
Yeah, it's a teaser to get them back again.
And we'll be definitely talking about that, but it's not being used properly. And so again, check out the ACLU's page on it because they're tracking these and we're going to see what we're looking at and we're doing it wrong already. And that's the scary thing is it's just going to take one court to
where
shut
do
it down.
Where from here?
Because right. once it's gone, we're not getting it back. So do you want to be the one, does your agency want to be the one that loses facial recognition for 890,000 cops in the state of in the United States?
Yeah. Well, I know it took a while to get you here, but I'm happy to have you. And thank you for your work and your loyalty and your diligent work with all of our policy clients across the country. You do a phenomenal job. And we're very honored to have you here with us at Daigle Law Group. So thank you for that.
My pleasure.
So everybody else, make sure you check out our First Amendment Summit. Time's coming quick. A lot of great information that we've talked about on podcasts along the way. And I will end as I always do. Help those who need your help. Protect those who need your protection. And most importantly, keep yourself and others safe. Thank you.